Hare Krishna. All right, there's a question here.
If you wanted to speak first, though, like, did you want to speak first, or did you want us to go right into the questions?
Well, you can tell me what your question is.
Well, I wanted to hear what you're working on now, because I heard you were writing a book about Prabhupada and the establishment of the temple in Juhu. Is there anything you want to tell us about that? We'd like to hear about it.
Okay. Are there any? I like to get all the questions first, and then I can weave them together, maybe.
My question is, before you came, we had most of the, for around half an hour, they were talking about male-female relations, the movement, and guidance and stuff. And my question is about the tradition. Instead of the tradition in Contra, can you comment on Prabhupada's idea of that? I'm not sure how they address sex and stuff. I'm being respectful. I'm not like being. But what is the story on that? Is like Prabhupada and this teaching just a conservative way of developing stuff? But there's other ways, like where Tantra is practiced, and what is that? Can you comment on that? If it's all right, if it's not too far out of bounds? Or...
You know it's out of bounds.
No, I don't think
you,
it is.
You just want to know if it's too far out of bounds.
In this tradition, I've experienced... In Buddhism, the Vajrayana, the Tantra, most of it has nothing to do with sex. But I'm just curious. I mean, I started with this when I was young. And it's my foundation, my root guru, if you will, or something like that. So I come to this festival, and sometimes questions come up, and it has to do with that perspective. I'm not being antagonistic or anything like that.
Well, there's in Vedic culture, there's two paths. One is called Nivritti Marg, and the other is Pravritti Marg. And Nivritti Marg is the path of extinguishing material desires, and Pravritti Marg is the path of trying to fulfill material desires. So, ultimately, in order to experience the highest pleasure, it's a natural result that you will give up the inferior pleasure of the body to experience the greater pleasure of the soul. So we want to help people experience the greatest pleasure of the soul. But sometimes in order to get something greater, you have to give up something lesser, which is the so-called pleasures of the material senses. There is a story of Sanatana Goswami. Well, there was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he was worshiping Lord Shiva. And would you like to come in and sit down? There are a couple of seats. If you want.
Okay, so we've got Mata Shini, so we want
to be right back. Okay.
Are you
going to
speak for another 5 minutes?
Yeah. What is your good name?
Anthony.
Anthony. All right, you're with me, right?
Yeah, I can follow you, Lord.
Yeah. So this devotee of Shiva, he pleased Lord Shiva with his sacrifices, and so he asked a boon of Lord Shiva, that I want the most valuable thing. So Lord Shiva said, I don't have the most valuable thing, but if you go to Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan, he has the most valuable thing. So he went to Sanatan Goswami, and he said, he thought the most valuable thing was a touchstone that would turn anything into gold. He said, I want the most valuable thing, the touchstone. He said, oh, the touchstone. Yes, I think it's out in the back in the trash somewhere. If you look through the trash, you'll probably find it. So he found it, and he touched some things, and it turned to gold. And he thought, oh, this is fantastic. This is everything I want, I can get now. But then he thought, you know, if that saintly person keeps this in the trash, discarded it in the trash, he must not consider it to be very valuable. He must have something more valuable. So he went back to him and he said, you know, I think you have something more valuable than touchstone. I want the most valuable thing. So Sanatana Goswami said, oh, you want the most valuable thing. Oh, yes, I can give you that. But first you have to throw the touchstone in the river. So he was hesitant, because he knew he was getting good gold from that touchstone. But still, he knew there must be something more valuable, because otherwise, why would he keep it out in the trash? So, you know, he took the leap of faith, and he threw the touchstone in the Jamuna River, and he went back, and he said, now, I did it. So I want really the most valuable thing. He said, okay, I will give you the most, really the most valuable thing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So sometimes you have to give up something inferior to get something greater.
I get them sometimes.
Yeah.
I give them. I arrived here sometimes.
Yes.
No, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, certain things that Holden gave him the Maha Mantra. Yes. He gave him the Maha Mantra.
Yes. Yes. That's what the most valuable thing. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
And what does the devotee say after he got it? What did the person that got the mantra, did it take him a while to appreciate it?
Well, it depends on the receptivity of the candidate. But if someone is without offense, then he can immediately feel the wonderful effects of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Sanatana Goswami told him that I haven't heard the story in a while, but didn't he tell him that first he had to throw away the touchstone?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm spaced out. Okay, never mind.
Question? So you mentioned that there are two different Vedic paths. I never knew that. And there's kind of a, you know, push for us to return to Vedic society and Varnashrama Dharma. And you hear all these things from different devotees. Oh, this isn't the Dvaitas, or this isn't the Dvaitas. And it's like, how do you really know which ideas from the Vedas to accept and which ones are irrelevant to our practice today?
What is your name?
Alex.
Alex. What you have asked is a very good question, because the Vedas, the Vedic literatures are vast, and we don't have time to read them all. And even if we were to try to read them on our own, we'd probably be confused because there are so many different prescriptions. So the essence of the Vedas is the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna himself, who's accepted as the Supreme Being, to Arjuna. And so it's described that the Vedas are like a cow, and the Bhagavad Gita is like the milk from the cow. It's the essence. And Krishna is like the milkman, and Arjuna is like the fortunate person who is drinking the milk from Krishna. So if you can understand the Bhagavad Gita, then you have understood the essence of the Vedas. And within the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discusses different types of yoga. Bhagavad Gita is like the primary textbook of yoga. And yoga really means to connect with God. So he discusses many different types of yoga, but he does say that of all types of yogis, yoginam api sarvesham, of all types of yogis, madgata antaratmata, shradavan bhajate yo mam samayukta tamam mataha, that of all kinds of yogis, the one who serves me with faith and devotion is the best. And all the different chapters of, on the different types of yoga culminate in the 12th chapter, which is on bhakti yoga. So the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Vedas, and the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is bhakti yoga. And the essence of bhakti yoga is chanting and hearing about Krishna, which is what we're doing. So it's actually easy to understand. Krishna also says, "Vaidaischa sarvair aham eva vedyo," that the purpose of all the Vedas is to know Krishna. And then he says, "Bhakti maham abhijanati," and that he can be known only by bhakti yoga. So what we are practicing here and discussing here is really the essence of the Vedas and the perfection of yoga. And Krishna also says, Sushukam Avyayam, that it is easy to perform and happy, joyfully perform. So, is that all right?
Thank
you. We got.
My question is, for one who's looking to take initiation, what are some important questions to ask a potential guru?
What is your name?
Adriel.
Adriel? Wow, it's like AAA here. This is like a, got an A-class audience. Well, before I would answer your question, I would suggest, I would begin my answer with a question, which is, why do you ask a question? Why do you want to know about finding a guru? What is your interest in finding a guru?
Well, I've been spending, you know, quite a bit of time at the temple, chanting rounds.
He's from San Diego.
Reading, studying, attending morning program. So I'm starting to, you know, go inclinations towards finding a guru. You always hear that, you know, taking initiation is the beginning of your spiritual lives, and finding a guru is more important than finding a why for anything else. So, you know, it's kind of a big decision to make. So, what are some questions, you know, that you should prepare, or things to understand when, you know, beginning this process?
Okay. Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
What books have you read?
I've read many of the small books. I'm on chapter 14 of the Bhagavad Gita. I've read all the verses in the Bhagavad Gita several times. I'm finishing teachings of Lord Chaitanya. I attend Srimad Bhagavatam class at the temple. So.
That all sounds very good. And have you read anything about Srila Prabhupada?
I attended the seminar by, I can't remember his name, but he referred to himself as Uncle S.
Sureshwar Prabhu?
Yes. I haven't read anything specific about his life or anything other than that seminar and stories I hear from devotees.
Okay. Well, it would be good if you read something about him. I mean, there is a book called Srila Prabhupada the Ramrita, which explains a lot about him. And from Srila Prabhupada the Ramrita, you can understand the history of Srila Prabhupada, the history of ISKCON, and in a way the history of Bhakti Yoga and how it was applied by Srila Prabhupada. For all of us. Do you pray?
Yes.
What do you, if you don't mind, what do you pray for?
Oh, when you say
pray, you know, to Krishna for strength to keep me situated spiritually, and I pray for others, you know, a lot also, to give them strength to gain Krishna consciousness if they don't have it, friends and family, or even devotees, actually, that I might see struggle with certain things. So, you know, those sort of things usually.
And did you ever think of praying to Srila Prabhupada or Krishna to guide you to your guru?
Yes, I've been told that before also by devotees. So, yeah, that hasn't been my focus, my praying just yet, but.
So I don't think you need to. You don't seem to be in anxiety about it.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So when you're in anxiety, then then you'll pray. And yeah, maybe it's just not the right time. I mean, as long as you're under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada and his followers, then you're going in the right direction. And, you know, accepting a personal spiritual master is something that comes at a certain point. As long as you keep associating with the devotees and following the process, you'll continue to make progress. And if you don't commit offenses, which doubt you are, so just keep going.
Thank you.
The question is, why did Krishna create Brahma, and did Brahma create the souls, all of us?
Yes, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Jayate Miyate Bhakarachyam," that the soul is not born and it does not die at any time. So the soul is not actually created, it exists eternally. But it's like the sun rays and the sun. They both exist simultaneously, but still you could say that the sunshine comes from the sun, because the sun is primary and the sunshine is secondary. So yes, we come from Krishna, and Brahma, he engineers the creation of the universe, but not the souls. The souls already exist, and when the universe is created, then Krishna sends the souls into the universe. Yeah, so our real father is Krishna.
Questions?
Hare Krishna.
I was listening to a lecture that you gave about disciples coming to become qualified to be initiated. One of the things you mentioned was eagerness. So I thought of two aspects or two different things. Srila Prabhupada's life and Bhaktisiddhanta his life. and then to the Prabhupada, like, he had waited 11 years before he had taken Diksha, Bhaktisiddhanta. And Bhaktisiddhanta had, in a sense, you could say, threatened Gaurakishore Das Babaji by saying, like, I'll kill myself if you don't give me initiation. So how does the spiritual master maybe revealed, or how does he know that this disciple is qualified? Or, and on the opposite end, how does the disciple know that he's actually eager?
Well, yes, that's a good question. We should be eager to serve, and we should be eager to hear and learn. So yes, that's basic. And but we need both enthusiasm and patience. If you have enthusiasm but no patience, then that can lead to a desire to control. And if you have patience without enthusiasm, that can lead to lethargy. Lethargy. So we want both. We want enthusiasm to progress, but we also have to be patient, because it may take time to achieve a particular goal that we have. But we still persevere. In his question, he mentioned two examples. Srila Prabhupada was, he met his Guru Maharaj in 1922, and within his heart he accepted him as his spiritual master. But he didn't actually get initiated until 1933, which is 11 years later. And it was just maybe an arrangement to show us that we can be patient. And it might have also been circumstances that Srila Prabhupada moved to Allahabad for his business, and then it took some time before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came to Allahabad. But then when he did come, Srila Prabhupada was initiated immediately. But yes, the other example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he, Hare Krishna. Bharadraj Prabhu, after you finish your prasad, come and sit here. Maybe you can also speak a little. You have a big plate. Yeah, but the main thing is to surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Nantaday Prabhu. Maybe some. It's all right. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Questions? More questions?
All right, well, you asked about Juhu. And I heard quite an amazing story just today. I mean, I missed hearing it, but the architect of the Juhu project, Suravir Prabhu, came to New Dwarka for the Prabhupada Festival over the Memorial Day weekend. And he said that when he first met Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada found out that he was an architect, Srila Prabhupada asked him to design a huge, magnificent temple for Los Angeles, because he was planning that Los Angeles was going to be his world headquarters, Western world headquarters or world headquarters. And so he was going to send Surabhi Prabhu to Los Angeles. But then, when Surabhi Prabhu was ready, Prabhupada said, no, I don't want you to go to Los Angeles. I want you to go to Bombay. And then he said that within my heart, I wanted to make this temple as an offering to Dwarkadish. But Dwarkadish told me, no, you should make it in Bombay. And still, Prabhupada didn't accept it. He said, no, within my heart, I want to make this offering to you. No, this is my Western world headquarters. And Dwarkadish said, no, I want you to make this temple in Bombay. And then the third time, this sort of transcendental discussion or argument, and third time, Dwarkadish said, no, if you want to please me, then make this temple in Bombay. And then he sent Saurabh to Bombay. And then Saurabh, like, opened his heart to Lord Dwarkadish. This is at the festival. And he said to Lord Dwarkadish that I am eternally indebted to you because of you, I went to Bombay and I got to do so much service for Srila Prabhupada and have so much association with Srila Prabhupada. So I owe that to you because you insisted that Prabhupada build that temple in Juhu. So it's quite a... And Saurabh had actually been away from the Association of Devotees for a number of years, and he wasn't sure how the devotees would respond to him after he was away for so long. And when he came to Vrindavan for the 40th anniversary of the opening of the temple there, and then he came to Los Angeles for the Prabhupada reunion, and he said that, you know, usually someone will have one or two best friends. He said when he first met the devotees, he thought, you know, if I were in the material world, I probably wouldn't be friends with any of these people. But then after a while, you know, he started to see them more spiritually. And, you know, they actually became his friends. So then he explained that, but after he was away, he wasn't sure how he would be received, and he was welcomed with, you know, overwhelming love and appreciation and gratitude from the devotees. And then he said that, you know, if someone has one or two good friends, he's quite likely. But after he came back, he realized that actually, all these devotees are my friends. And then after a while, he realized, no, they're not just my friends, they're my best friends. Every single one of these devotees is my best friend. And then he realized further, finally, that these devotees are my only friends. And that was his realization. He had advanced liver cancer, so that he came to Vrindavan and he came here, and then he went back to Hong Kong, and then just last week he felt his time had come, so he came back to Vrindavan and he left. Yeah, about a week ago. Yeah, and he said that Prabhupada had told him that for building these two temples, Vrindavan and Juhu, you know, his ticket back to Godhead was guaranteed. As long as the temples remained functioning. So he said, like, for those 30 years when he was in Hong Kong and he wasn't so aware of what was happening, and it's kind of like he was like wondering, oh, what's going to happen? What's happening in Vrindavan? What's happening in Bombay? Because, like, you know, after the Acharya leaves, things happen and you don't know what the final result will be. So he was like really worried because he was, you know, his hopes were on those temples. And then when he came and he saw, like, they're flourishing and beautiful deity worship and hundreds and thousands of people coming, and said, okay, I got my ticket, I got my ticket.
Maharaj, have you heard other shrines of Prabhupada who put a condition on the mercy?
Hello? Yes. I just repeat the question. So, have you heard Srila Prabhupada at other times put a condition on a mercy?
Well, in a general sense, it's like if you chant 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, and do your best to spread Krishna consciousness, you'll go back to Godhead. So that's sort of the condition. But this, I never heard of one quite like this.
I have another question since you were in Bombay. When, maybe you can give me the backstab story or some information. When the temple was attacked once, and I think that Malat, no, Malat, what's the name?
Mighty Healy.
Mighty Healy. Didn't she like say over my dead body? And did Srila Prabhupada also mention something like, because she did that, she'll also receive the mercy or go back together for something like that? Do you know the story?
Yeah, I was there. It's a long story, but the... Hare Krishna. Would you like to sit? Where do you like to sit?
I gotta go in a few minutes.
Yeah, so without going into the details, you could say that it was a conspiracy.
Right.
And the owner of the land wanted to get us off the land. Yeah. Actually, by then he had died.
Right.
It was about two months after he died.
We sure what happened, you remember?
Yeah. This event took place on May 19th, 1973.
You remember that?
Nair died on February 17th, 1973. Okay. 3 months. So the municipal demolition crew came, and they were supported by the police. And we had permits. It was all... People say that Mrs. Nair used her life insurance money to take care of the municipal officers and the police. Yeah. So they came, and Mike Ely, she had like a big body. And they, you know, one by one, the devotees were going up to stop the demolition workers. And they were just taken by the police and put in the wagon. And she was the last one. And she was like, she positioned herself right in front of the doors. And, you know, and she was strong and she was like wild for the deities.
And
she's Prabhupada's disciple, Mike Lee,
American.
And she, so yeah, they had to grab her by her arms and legs. I think they grabbed her by the hair and arms and legs and dragged her away. So many devotees, I'm not sure about Prabhupada, but many devotees said that, you know, just for that service, you'll go back home, back to Godhead.
So the deities who already had this time, they wanted to demolish the temple? Or what?
Yeah, they wanted, yeah.
Okay.
So we would leave. And basically, they wanted to drive us out. So she...
We're going back all
Yeah.
In America, we did pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Maharaj, I heard that after that, two Indian ladies that were like members or something, they were there and they got in front of the police and you know, Indian ladies and the police were younger and they could grab them.
Yeah, I heard that recently too.
Oh, recently? You think it's true?
Probably. But yeah. But she sometimes mightily comments like, that's how she's going to go back to Godhead, kicking and screaming.
You were saying that she's guaranteed a place in heaven, you know, by building the temple. I'm getting back on that, the tantric tradition. They say that when you do things a certain way, you're guaranteed on the spiritual side results, like with the offerings, the actions, and it just simply flips over the consciousness of heaven, you know, the what they would call in Buddhism the Pure Land, or in the Catholic, they call it the communion of saints. You know, all the saints were holy, so they were able to communicate with each other and the petition the saint you can do. And that's there's a group that's similar to Krishna called NKT. You know, those people that are protesting the Dalai Lama wherever he goes, you know, the base over in the UK, up in Overseas. And I learned these secrets there. So it's more of a comment on like your actions create your karma that translate into maybe like a citizenship in Vrindavan, you know, in the spiritual world. So maybe you could comment on that, on you know, from the text.
Well, I don't know about so many complicated subjects.
It's not really that complicated. It's just to be good, to be people good. Build a temple and God's happy. It's serious.
Okay. All right, that's pretty simple.
He should become our guru. We'll all make it to the spiritual world with him, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Do they talk much about that in the Vedas? Because when I first learned about this 40, 50 years ago, on my own, I was interested. And when I come to these festivals, I try to get answers, but I don't know. Can you mirror and be conscious of your building your citizenship up? Yeah. Can you actually monitor that? Can they talk about that? How can you try to do it?
Well, there are different stages of spiritual progress. I mean, there's sadhana, siddha, that means you attain perfection by sadhana. And there's kripa siddha, which means that you attain perfection by the mercy of Krishna or some devotee. So with Saurabhya Prabhu and his building the Juhu temple and the Vrindavan temple, it's sort of like Kripa Siddha, that he did for his service by the mercy of a powerful Vaishnava, he would be liberated. And that's compared to like an honorary degree. Someone sometimes gets an honorary degree from a university, but that's rare. Generally, to get a degree, you have to enroll and take the courses and pass the exams, and then you get your degree. So generally, you know, we're working towards sadhana siddha. And, if we follow the process and don't commit offenses, then, we'll feel that we're making progress, and eventually we'll, you know, achieve perfection.
One of your previous colleagues said that, feel it, and then you
come
back. Yeah, you do.
Okay, so Maharaj, can we take his last question, please?
Sure. This gentleman raised his hand.
Okay, so I'll get to Maharaj. Whatever you want.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Thank you. Okay, hi. So I just wanted to know, or I was just curious, with all your time devoted to Krishna and to this lifestyle, do you feel that you are fulfilled, that you are happy now than ever before? have reached a point in your life where you are sustaining without the material aspects of life, like
yes. You want to ask yours or? Oh, you want elaboration? Well, advancement in Krishna consciousness can be quite subtle, because the activities in Krishna consciousness are the same as regular activities in the material world, more or less, but the goal is different. In the material world, people sing and dance and eat, but the goal is sense gratification. And we also chant and dance and feast, but the goal is Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that you get in an airplane and, you know, you sit down, you read a book, or you talk to your friend, you drink some water, and you don't even notice that you're going anywhere. But then you look out the window and you see, wow, I've like come a long way, you know? Like I'm above the clouds. The clouds are all down there. It's only sun up here. So, in that sense, you know, you look back and you see you've come a long way, because you don't desire those things. And a devotee is satisfied, fully satisfied in Krishna consciousness, in the sense that he doesn't want to do anything else. But he's not satisfied, okay, now I've done enough, so now I can just go to sleep. But he always feels he wants to do more. More for Srila Prabhupada, more for Krishna, more for other people. So he's satisfied in the sense that he doesn't want anything but Krishna consciousness, but he's not satisfied that he's done enough. He always wants to do more and do better. But that's, yeah. And another nice example, and it's a way of testing yourself. There's a, once Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk in Chicago, and he came to a car called Thunderbird. So he asked the devotees, is there any such a bird as the Thunderbird? So one devotee said, well, I think they named the car after an Indian chief. I don't know if it's true or if he just was speculating, but so I think they named it after an Indian chief named Thunderbird. But still, is there any such a bird as a Thunderbird? And he said that, you know, in India, we are aware of this bird. And the nature of this bird is that it will only drink water from the cloud. It's called the chatak. It's a type of bird. It will only drink water directly from the cloud. So the chatak bird is always hovering under the cloud, waiting for drops of water. But sometimes the cloud doesn't give water. Sometimes it gives thunder and lightning. But still, the chatuk bird will not go anywhere else for water. So the example is given that a devotee will take mercy only from Krishna. He doesn't want any material mercy, any mercy from the material world. And even if apparently Krishna is not giving mercy but giving thunderbolts, he still will not look for mercy in the material world. He'll patiently wait for Krishna's mercy. So that's another way of looking at it, that that even in difficulty, a devotee does not, doesn't want any mercy other than from Krishna. He won't look for mercy or relief in intoxication or any other form of sense gratification. So, yeah. Hare Krishna. What if you want to use this one?
So
maybe turn that one off.
Because you have the mic pointed towards the speaker.
Okay. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, it says that in the demoniac qualities, it says one who has demoniac qualities can have perfect, happy. So I was reading recently in Boychan Prabhu's book, Japa, and he was explaining that the result of sincere chanting is humility is produced, because the person realized that, okay, I'm not so great after all, I have a lot of faults. So upon realizing one's faults, there's a tendency to become discouraged. And then the Christians have this saying that, okay, everybody has their own cross to carry. I was speaking with one devotee, and he was explaining to me like that when I was bringing up some of my faults. So maybe you could just comment on the idea of how not to become discouraged after realizing so many different faults you may have.
Hare Krishna. I like my... Yes, Krishna consciousness is a process of purification. And when there's cleaning going on, you see the dirt. It's like you may have a house that you haven't cleaned for a long time. So there's a lot of dust and dirt, but it's all sort of settled. And then when you start to clean the house, you realize how dirty it was. And suddenly there's all this dust and dirt flying, and you think, wow, you know, it's like one disciple of Prabhupada's, like, he actually thought he was like more advanced before he became a devotee, because after he became a devotee, he started to see all this dirt. So Prabhupada explained, it's like the dirt was there, but it was all like settled. So now you're cleaning it, so you're seeing a lot of dirt flying, So you know, you think, oh, I've got more dirt now that I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I got more dirt than I had before, but it was there. But it's coming up and it's getting cleansed. And when your room is clean, you feel really good. So, yeah, you shouldn't be discouraged, but you should just take it as just part of the purification. It's good. It's good. These things are coming up, and then when they come up, they can go out. Yeah.
And also, Prabhupada said it's a process, so he wants time. He didn't say, like, when you're pregnant, you just can't have the baby like that.
Yeah. The same thing, you have to be patient. It takes time.
Can I just quote Brahmananda's favorite line?
Yes, yes.
Because Brahmananda answered that very well. He said that Srila Prabhupada managed to love us even though we're not very lovable. So if you remember that Prabhupada and Krishna's love are not the kind of love we're experiencing here, that no matter what you do, you're always going to be lovable to them, then you never get discouraged. So you have to plug in into a different dimension and look at things the way they look at you.
Perfect.
So let us give Maharaj a very big round of applause.